Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
On Easter Sunday morning, I took some friends to church with me, and one of them is a retired state trooper. About 10 minutes into the drive, he was sitting in the front seat, the front passenger seat next to me, and his wife was in the back seat. And about 10 minutes into the drive, I said to him, "No comments about my driving." He said, "What?" I said, "I'll just admit I drive it like I stole it. I don't really like speed limits." And he was funny. I mean, he made jokes about it. That wasn't his job with the state police. He was a detective, not a traffic cop. But I don't know why I felt compelled to just warn him. Anyway, he was great. We had fun. He was teasing me about taking the long way and getting lost in paper bags and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, just hearing me complain about people who go slow in the left-hand lane, which is still one of my number one pet peeves. Just move over. If you want to go slow, that's totally fine. But I don't want to go slow. So can you move over, please? Anyway, I had to warn him. It was Easter Sunday morning. I don't suppose I was breaking too many speed limits. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Good morning to you. It's Tuesday, April 6th. Today is Grammy Helen's 99th birthday. She's not awake because it's 4 o'clock in Appleton, Wisconsin. However, and actually she sleeps late now, so I won't call her before I go to bed. But I'm already grinning ear to ear. Her birthday gifts, a couple of them, they were supposed to show up at her apartment today. And not only will I get to call her today and talk to her, but we've got a Skype call set up for tomorrow, Wednesday. So I'm really excited about my superhero turning 99 and what a year she's had. Like many of us, she has survived so much that we never thought possible. Not only getting the virus, but then getting all kinds of side effects from the vaccination, which came within 90 days of her having the virus. So it apparently makes it even more complicated in your body than very often is producing more side effects, according to doctors. She also fell and broke a bone in her pelvis and was in rehab for 6 weeks and was isolated for more than a year from any family visits or even friends. But thank heavens, the dining hall is open. She's seeing people every day. She's recovered completely from that broken bone, and she's getting her energy and her strength back after the vaccination process. And she's 99 and still tells great stories, and we still laugh every time I call her on the phone. So I appreciate all of your kind wishes for Grammy Helen, 99 years young and amazing. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. What if I told you the Baylor men's basketball team would never trail in the Final Four, and that the performance against Houston in the national semi, in which the Bears were up 25 points at halftime, might not even be the most impressive performance of the weekend? The Baylor Bears handed Gonzaga its first loss and only loss of the season, but did it in such dominating fashion that there could be absolutely no doubt who the national champion should be.
Flagler standing near the logo, moving from our right to our left, gets to the left-hand wing. Flagler picks up the dribble, gives it to Mitchell. Mitchell, a little crossover, 15-foot jumper is good. Mitchell hits from deep, 11-1 Baylor by 10. Davion Mitchell with a steal, loping to the other end of the floor, got caught under the basket. It hit the bottom of the rim, but it stays with Baylor. The three from Flagler on the left wing rolls home. The scramble situation, and Adam Flagler drains a three, and Baylor up 21-6. It's the largest deficit of the season for the unbeaten Bulldogs. Meyer dribbling top of the key for the Bears. Up 21-8. Meyer feeds inside. All alone, Chamwa Chachua with a two-hand stuff, and it's 23-8.
Kevin Kugler on the Westwood One NCAA Radio Network. On their way to a 19-point lead in the first half, they never trailed. The Baylor Bears came out with power and pace. They were aggressive. They were in attack mode from the jump. We could see the strength, not to mention the advantage at the guard position, that trio of guards that's so good, led by Jared Butler. But they started out 5-for-5 from three-point land. And then even when Gonzaga was able to finish the first half on a 9-2 run, cut down on the turnovers, find a little offense for themselves. Starting the second half, what does Baylor do? Nail a couple more triples and build the lead back to 20. Never trailed in the entire Final Four, not in the semifinal against Houston and not against previously undefeated top seed Gonzaga. Congratulations to Baylor. This isn't just a men's college basketball championship. This is the first men's college basketball championship in Baylor program history. And when you consider the school and where it was 18 years ago when Scott Drew was hired as the head coach, if you're not familiar with the history, Dave Bliss was the coach who was ousted and essentially disgraced for a cover-up of a murder within his own program. The scandal and the fallout left that basketball program in the rubble. And Scott Drew took that job, took that challenge, believed that he could rebuild it, that he could turn that school and that program into a contender. But his first 3 years as head coach, they barely won 20 games. You want to talk about building from scratch. That was the job Scott Drew accepted, and yet a rags-to-riches story unlike any other. And really, as much as Baylor is a product of Scott Drew's coaching and his recruiting and his teaching, his belief in these guys, you also have to think that this Baylor team, with its maturity and its poise, its ability to handle pressure, its chemistry, that was also a product of the last 2 years, or really the last year and a half. They had a 23-game win streak and would have been a number one seed in last year's tournament, only to have the disappointment that every school faced when March Madness was shut down, was canceled. They didn't know if they'd have this opportunity again. And then as they're cruising along this season, trying to build back into that mode and challenge in 21, they hit a three-week stoppage. Just no basketball, COVID protocols, 3 weeks, no games, very few practices. Everything they worked for, they're watching it slip away. And when they came back, it was tough. They were out of rhythm. Basketball is one of those sports where you need to play it every day or every other day. It's not like football. You're talking about that muscle memory where you're either practicing or you're playing in a game every day during the season. And it took him some time to find that rhythm again, but it also built incredible chemistry and an incredible bond. And Jared Butler, one of their star guards, would tell you it was definitely all worth it, all worth the effort, the stress, the pressure, everything that culminated with last night's victory.
Oh, it was definitely worth it. I mean, the ups and downs, the COVID stops and getting tested 30 days in a row. I'm not saying a prosperity gospel, but our Lord and Savior got us through the whole time. Our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. That's all I can say. And this team is phenomenal. You know, we sacrificed so much stuff, and, we deserve it. We really deserve it.
I love the emotion in Jared's voice. The fact that he looks at the big picture and that he's got perspective. 10 of 23 from downtown, a huge edge in rebounds, including 16 offensive rebounds, where they really did their damage early in this game, and forcing Gonzaga, normally reliable Gonzaga, into silly mistakes and turnovers. Now, a lot of people said the Zags look tired. I don't think that's necessarily the case. And why would they be any more tired than Baylor? Baylor didn't necessarily have to play as hard over the course of their game against Houston. But these are young men. I mean, let's be honest. They're teenagers and early 20s. I just think they look sloppy. And it was a bad matchup. So Gonzaga falls short. Once again, the bridesmaid, but not the bride, does not become the first team to win the national championship with a perfect record since 1976. And as you can imagine, incredible disappointment, devastation. Jalen Suggs, who's a freshman and likely headed to the NBA lottery, was also crying tears after this game. Remember the tears of joy after his game-winning shot against UCLA? Different tears on Monday night. And so I feel for Gonzaga. I feel for Mark Few. Everything they poured into it. Their best opportunity to finally win a title. But it doesn't mean they won't. Just means they got to start, not quite from scratch, but they got to start back at square one. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Gonzaga actually shot 50% for this game, so offense wasn't the issue, but didn't have an answer for the three-point shooting. The zone only worked for a short stretch of time. Really couldn't combat the Bears on the glass, especially not on the, well, Gonzaga's defensive end, but Baylor's offensive end. And once they fell into a hole, could never get closer than 9 points.
It's obviously a feeling these guys had never had to address and deal with, but I think the nature of it tonight probably made it, it's not easy, but again, you just as a coach try to give them as much perspective. I never felt like we played with that weight all year. I always felt like we were the aggressor, and we were always, I call it attack mode, and we just ran into a team tonight that was, they were the aggressor, clearly.
Certainly, there are a lot of basketball teams that would love to be in Gonzaga's position, obviously, in Baylor's. But in Gonzaga's situation, not having lost all season, a conference championship, the overall number one seed for the first time in program history, and the opportunity to play in the Final Four, and then that incredible victory against UCLA. So no need to cry for Gonzaga. But it is disappointing. And they've come so close so many times. For Jalen Suggs, 22 points, 3 assists. Again, likely not to have this opportunity again if he does choose to move on to the NBA. And you never know if you're going to catch this lightning in a bottle, and certainly don't know if you're going to catch it again next season. Think about Aaron Rodgers. After the NFC Championship, he was gutted, right? They were the top seed. He was the MVP. 13-3, hosted the NFC Championship. A lot of NFL teams would love to be in that position and probably wouldn't complain about it. Ahem, Jets, Jaguars. But when your aspirations are championship or bust, when you come so close you can taste it, it's a different kind of disappointment. But failure, if you don't allow it to crush you, can turn into another stepping stone, obviously a motivator, and like any other type of adversity, can build character, can build chemistry, can bond a team together, and can ultimately make you better. So yeah, that feeling of losing, first time, unfortunately the worst possible time for Corey Kispert and the Zags.
You really do forget what it's like to lose, and every time it happens, it doesn't feel good. And thankfully, I've had, not very many of them over my career, whether it's in the regular season or in the tournament. When you come up against a team like that who's just firing on all cylinders for 40 minutes, it's really hard to compete with.
Baylor proved that. Never a doubt from the very start when they were up by 10 points within a couple of minutes. And in fact, Gonzaga didn't score a field goal until 4.5 minutes had elapsed. You just don't see that with the Zags. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. One more. Scott Drew has a message to Hollywood.
Hey, Texas, we got a national championship, too. The state deserves it.
It's just the second ever in men's basketball for the state of Texas with Texas Western. But you look at
the first one they did a movie, Texas Western, Glory Road. And John Lee Hancock promised us when we won a national championship, we were getting a movie. Yeah!
The exaltation of Scott Drew. You got to believe, baby. And boy, did he. Just an awesome story, an awesome journey. And I love the fact that it's not vanilla. It's got some depth to it. It is worthy of Hollywood.
Yeah!
Scott Drew along with Jim Nantz. Is anyone else worried about Jim Nantz? He sounds a little hoarse to me. Good thing he doesn't have to raise his voice with his next big event on CBS, which comes up this weekend. The big events continue. The best golfers in the world are descending on Augusta National. The azaleas, they're beautiful. I've seen pictures. The green jacket is the prize. It's a tradition unlike any other, though he says it so much better than I do. The Masters, and the coverage begins Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern. That's noon Pacific. Continues Sunday at 2 Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, so you can watch the final round of the Masters with brunch on the West Coast. That's only on CBS.
Hello, friends.
Hello, Jim Nantz. You did such a good job, as always. Such a different feel, though, from Gonzaga's national semi to what we saw on Monday night. Take nothing. In fact, that should prove to you that Baylor was the better team and was locked in from the start. I was really proud of my mom. She sent me a text. My mom's in Texas. She's got a bunch of former students who are now at Baylor. And she watched all the way to the end in solidarity. She said her husband went to bed because he was bored. Well, not bored, but he didn't want to stay up for the second half. But she watched all the way to the end because she wanted to be able to talk about it with her former students. Way to go, Mom. Mom's not a huge sports fan, but because I played basketball, she did get into basketball. And she knows more about hoops than she does about any other sport, except bowling. She was actually a great bowler in her day. As an athlete. So congratulations to Baylor, and the basketball season is in the books. Can you believe it? We're on to the Masters. We've got the NFL draft coming up, and the Jets tip their hand. We don't know who, but we know what they're doing with that number two overall pick. And so we're going to get to that. Sam Darnold, a fresh start with the Panthers. And we're asking you, who would you start if you're Matt Rhule, if you're Carolina's coaching staff? And I know it's April, so you don't have to make a choice right now. But we put a poll up on our Twitter, After Hours CBS, and also we've got a post on our Facebook page asking you, who would you start, Sam Darnold or Teddy Bridgewater? Knowing what we know right now, of course, things can change. People can change. 855-212-4227. We'll get back to your calls, too. I know some of you still want to weigh in on this Deshaun Watson situation. We are supposed to hear from Tony Busby, the attorney for the women who are accusing Deshaun, now up to 22 civil lawsuits. And then there's 18 more women who are coming out to vouch for Deshaun. And I just, serious question, don't know how many massage therapists one man needs. This is a lot of massage therapists over the course of a couple of years. I can barely change hairdressers, for heaven's sakes, but that's just me. I'm a creature of habit.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Two receivers to the left, one to the right. Darnold, rush coming. Darnold avoids it, steps up. Darnold looking to run again. Oh, what a fake at the 45. He's to the 40, 30. 25-20, Sam Darnold could go. He's in for the touchdown. A brilliant run. Major highlight for Sam Darnold. He was dead to rights, and he turned it into six.
I want to be a Jet for life. I love the people here. I love living here. I want to turn this thing around. I believe that we can. There's going to be a lot of work involved in that. And we all know it's a process.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
It's a process that now involves a trade to Charlotte. I didn't actually check Sam's social media. I don't have Insta. I think he has Instagram. But I didn't check it to see if there was any reaction from him. I am sad for Sam that he didn't get what he wanted, which was an opportunity to work with Robert Saleh and to see the rebuild. But I think ultimately, especially if this results in a starting job with Carolina, which is definitely on the table, ultimately I believe Sam will maybe see the wisdom in this and often a fresh start. Or let's put it this way. One door getting slammed in your face can lead to another opportunity that maybe you didn't want, but you will embrace, and I do believe he will do that because he wants to play. He wants to be a starter in the NFL. If he embraces it and he throws himself into it, I don't think the final chapter's been written on his NFL career. He's smart. He's still really young, but he does have some experience. Now he's going to have to learn another new system, another new coach, another new offensive coordinator. It's new all over again, but that could be exactly what Sam Darnold needs to get out of a place where they've already decided what they have in Darnold. Panthers were obviously shooting for the moon, and Darnold wasn't their first choice, let's be honest. But I say this all the time. I don't care if I'm your fifth choice or your sixth choice or your seventh or your eighth. Just give me a chance and I'll prove to you I should have been your first choice all along. And I believe that Darnold will approach it with the same attitude because that's what we've seen of him. Now, he needs to stay healthy, but it sounds like there's going to be a competition with him and Teddy Bridgewater, at least as it stands right now. A lot can change between April and the start of the season. Three total picks that the Panthers gave up in exchange for Sam Darnold, a sixth round pick in this current draft, and then a second and a fourth in 22. So we know what the Jets are doing with that overall number two pick. They've decided they're going to draft a QB. Most insiders believe Zach Wilson of BYU is their choice. And I heard Ian Rappaport on NFL Network say that we're now locked into the first three picks of the draft being QBs and potentially the number four pick being a QB as well, whether it's another team trading in or whether it's the Falcons. So interesting, just to kind of think about the way this draft is shaping up. We knew it was going to be a quarterback-rich draft, but the emphasis, have we ever seen, let's say, the first three, four picks, straight QBs? Straight QB, homie, to paraphrase Randy Moss. 855-212-4227 on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Would you start Sam or Teddy with the information you have right now? I feel for Teddy Bridgewater. He's got the edge in terms of knowledge and experience and familiarity with Matt Rhule and with the system. But he knows. You don't have to be a genius to recognize that the Panthers weren't happy with you as the starter. Now, they didn't have Christian McCaffrey for most of last year. It's definitely been a rebuilding project. But if I'm Bridgewater, I definitely have a chip on my shoulder. So who would you take right now? Who would you make the starter right now? Again, 855-212-4227. Dave is in Charlotte. Welcome to After Hours.
Hey, Amy L.
Yo.
Hey, this is Dave. I love your show. I love your voice.
Thank you.
I want to applaud you for the way you handled your unruly caller an hour ago.
Yeah. I mean, he's passionate about what he believes. We just completely disagree.
And I agree that you should because maybe he's uneducated about the facts of what's happening.
Stop.
But anyway, as getting to living in Charlotte, going after Sam Darnold, yes, it wasn't the choice that the Panthers fans wanted, and I'm in the heart of hearing everything and how they've been tearing down Teddy Bridgewater. And, yeah, he didn't have Christian McCaffrey last year.
Wait, when you say who's they? Who's tearing down Bridgewater?
Just the local sports sports.
I mean, that's media. That's what media do for the most part.
Yeah, the local media. But Teddy's a professional and everything. But I felt that when Sam came out of the draft, especially how with USC he manhandled Penn State in the Rose Bowl, I thought he was one of the best prospects. And going to a crap show in New York, this could rebirth his career, and he could really show what he could do, what his potential is. Mm. I believe that him coming to Carolina will totally prove his potential. And, you know, if he competes with Teddy Bridgewater, okay. If the Panthers trade Teddy Bridgewater, okay. Then Sam
trade him where, though? I mean, I know that they would have liked to move him if they had a proven starter or a proven replacement. I don't know that that's Sam Darnold. So it'll be interesting to see if there's even a market for Bridgewater, but I'm not sure there are many teams out there that are still willing to trade assets for a starting QB because all the teams out there have them or they're going after one in the draft.
QB, he was in Minnesota, and then he had a horrible injury. Darnold, yeah, he had mono with the Jets, but his ability is off the charts. He has all the tools, all the talent. He just was in the wrong system, and he was tortured by what New York gave to him. And now he's here in Carolina, where I believe that he could flourish. And if Teddy's outright released, well then, I know David Tepper, you know, he has no problem just, you know, eating up his contract, you know, because the guy's a billionaire. Mm. He's the richest owner in the league. He was seeking other options, but I believe that Sam Darnold will be starter week one in Carolina.
All right.
And with Joe Brady and Matt Rhule and that system and the up-and-coming, young, hungry defense that the Panthers have, they're going to compete, if not overtake, the Buccaneers this year.
Oh, okay.
And
win the
NFC South.
Okay, we'll see. You know that the Buccaneers have all 22 starters back, right?
Yeah, and they're all 1 year older, and they also have a Super Bowl hangover, which always happens. And Brady's
does
proved
it?
That because
did
how
it,
many
did it happen
Bowls
to the Chiefs? Did it happen to the Chiefs?
Yes, it did.
No, it didn't.
How many Super,
no, it didn't.
They lost. They lost in the Super Bowl.
You don't call it a Super Bowl hangover when you get back to the Super Bowl, Dave. Knock it off. They were the stop it. They were the top seed in the AFC. That's not a Super Bowl hangover.
Absolutely, it is.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, man!
You know, Brady lost Super Bowls.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I got you. All right, Dave, we'll let you go here, but I appreciate your optimism. I'm sure that Matt Rhule and David Tepper also appreciate fans like you. Thank you so much. 855-212-4227 on Twitter, A Law Radio. A lot of you debating Bridgewater versus Darnold on our Facebook page. Lee says, I would say Bridgewater, he's more seasoned as a veteran, though he's had his fair share of injuries. But a lot of you are leaning toward Darnold because you believe he has the raw talent, though you just don't think you've had a chance to see the complete picture or a complete team around him in his first few seasons with the Jets. Or there's another guy who's reinstituted or who's kind of brought another quarterback into the conversation, Darnell. Or maybe it's Darnell. You guys with your autocorrect. We're just going to assume it was autocorrect now that you don't actually know which quarterback we're talking about.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Patterson will put the brakes on and dribble this one out. And the Baylor Bears do indeed bear down to knock off the unbeaten Gonzaga Bulldogs and claim the school's first men's basketball championship.
We were faced with a task at hand. We just know how to lock in We know how to play together. It's just phenomenal. I've never been a part of a group of guys who know how to lock in at when the time is clutch and it's big moments. Man, these guys are phenomenal. All of them are great basketball players, and that's all I can say. That's the only thing I know.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The Player of the Week brought to you by Grainger. Let's take a closer look at the feats of one Jared Butler, Most Outstanding Player Award for the Men's College Basketball Final Four. And he had 22 points, hit four triples in the championship game, and really, along with Macy Oteague, Adam Flagler, Davion Mitchell, set the pace early. They were 5 for 5 on their first five shots from deep, then hit their first two triples to start the second half. There were guards who were crashing the boards in addition to the big men underneath. They were forcing turnovers. Really, it was that backcourt that was aggressive in an attack mode from the beginning. And Jared Butler and the others, they were able to get Gonzaga out of its rhythm, but also force the issue, force the Zags into making sloppy mistakes and a lot of turnovers early. And I tweeted this last night during the game, but after 14 minutes, the Baylor Bears had 8 offensive rebounds and the Gonzaga Bulldogs had 8 turnovers. It was that kind of night for Baylor and for Jared Butler. And I love that he says winning made everything else worth it. The wait, the COVID shutdown, the protocols, the isolation, all of the pressures and stresses of playing basketball over this past year, winning makes it all worth it. On the Westwood One NCAA Radio Network, Kevin Kugler, and then post-game with Jared Butler, our Player of the Week, sponsored by Grainger. For all the ones who get it done, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, backed by 24/7 support and access to product experts. Call, click Grainger.com/safety, or just stop by. If not for Jared Butler and the fact that Baylor just won its first college basketball championship in program history, men's, the women have 3. In fact, Kim Mulkey was on Twitter congratulating the men's team. If not for Butler and Baylor, Randy Arozarena made a pretty good candidate for the Player of the Week.
Line toward right center field. This could be trouble. Arozarena jumps up and makes the catch. Oh, my. Flying through the air, Arozarena takes away extra bases, tagging at third and scoring is Vasquez. But what a catch by Randy Arozarena out there in right center field.
If you haven't seen it, Producer Dave, maybe you can find the Rays video of it. They put a GIF up. This was a diving catch, and it was behind Randy. So the ball was over his head, behind him, and to his right. So he is diving at an angle and catches this ball when he's prone. It's pretty amazing, the jump that he had to get to make that diving catch. And so when the Rays put it out there, it was already being labeled the catch of the year. That's the call on the Rays Radio Network with Dave Wills. I suppose if we're going to go down that road, if not Jared Butler or Randy Arozarena, we could go with the DeGrominator, the Mets ace, who finally got to pitch last night.
Nimmo leads from first. Moore ready with a chest high. Set is 1-2. Grom swings, taps it up the middle, off the glove of a leaping Moore. DeGrom sprints down the first baseline. He'll make it without a throw. And that's probably the first hit of the year for the Mets, coming off the bat of the pitcher hitting Jacob DeGrom. DeGrom lines towards shallow left field, coming in McCutchen. He can't get it. It's a base hit for DeGrom. Davis scores. Everybody else moves up a base. Jacob DeGrom is 2 for 2. And the Mets take a 2-0 lead here in the top of the fourth.
I know, he pitches too. Who wants the universal DH when you can have Jacob DeGrom? This is kind of cool. I don't know how many of you know this, if you're Mets fans or just in general baseball nerds. It's the first time in Mets history that a pitcher has ever recorded the first hit of a season. How about that? Pretty cool, right? It was a really neat note that they shared on the Mets radio network. So Wayne Randazzo with the calls there. DeGrom not only drives in the first run, but has 2 hits, and he was DeGrominating. Through his 6 innings, he had thrown 77 pitches, had struck out 7 Phillies, and had only given up 3 hits. So 6 shutout innings, but he got pulled. And then the Phillies scored 5 runs in the 8th inning and ended up beating the Mets once DeGrom was safely in the clubhouse. Joe Girardi said, well, you know, we'd rather face anyone but DeGrom.
Our guys didn't say anything, but obviously when you pull a guy like DeGrom, you know, you probably figure the bats, you know, I mean, the bats are so tough off of him. I don't know, maybe you relax a little bit more. But I didn't hear our guys say anything. I just think that they kept grinding it.
They definitely broke through once DeGrom was no longer on the mound. And because of that victory against the Mets, who are making their season debut, the Phillies are still undefeated. How about that? Bet you saw that coming. We are expecting to see the Nationals with their season debut, potentially a doubleheader on Tuesday. So I hope that's the case and that the Nationals can get started and not have to take a full week or 2 weeks away, just because I know they have plenty of time to make up games, but for their mental health, to be able to get on the field and to be able to play, to get back to what they've been doing now for a month, but also this delay, it can kind of play tricks with your mind. So I understand their anxiety, and it'll grow the more that they're kept away from playing baseball. So I'm hopeful that they'll be able to get on the field, but it was good to see the Mets in their debut, though they run into the Phillies, who are now 4-0. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. I'm just checking to be sure I got this right. Yes, I thought I was correct. The Astros lost last night, meaning the Phillies are the only undefeated team still standing in Major League Baseball, unless you count the Nationals, who have not yet played, so I'm not sure that's fair. There are other teams that have won 4 in a row, like the Dodgers, or 3 in a row, like the Angels. The Reds have 3 wins in a row, so do the Cubs. So you've got a lot of other teams that have only suffered 1 loss, but the Phillies are the last perfect team still standing. On Twitter, A-Law Radio, we're asking you to vote in our QB poll for the Panthers. We're trying to give the Panthers some advice. Right now, in April, still a couple weeks before the draft, who would you start? Sam Darnold or Teddy Bridgewater? This is a really tight poll, so I'd encourage you to check it out and to vote. Again, on Twitter, either my Twitter or After Hours CBS, and then our Facebook page as well. And some of you are saying, I don't like either one of these options. A lot of you believe that Darnold just needs a fresh start and a team around him. Certainly, if you are Darnold, as much as it's frustrating that you didn't get the chance to finish what you started in New York, and he clearly likes the city of New York, this may be the best thing that happens to him. Although, I don't know, if I'm Darnold, I probably was pretty excited about working with Robert Saleh and maybe seeing things turn around with the Jets too. But they've made their choice, and they are planning to draft a quarterback at number 2. Most analysts believe it will be Zach Wilson behind Trevor Lawrence, and then the Niners have that number 3 pick. Whether it's Mac Jones, Justin Fields, Trey Lance, according to Kyle Shanahan, those are the 3 quarterbacks they're looking at. Speaking of quarterbacks and the Panthers, the report that I heard on NFL Network is that the Panthers made kind of a last, well, I wouldn't say a last minute decision, but they had this last discussion about Deshaun Watson and whether or not it was worth it to try to go back and get him again from the Texans. Ultimately decided that it was not worth it for whatever reason, that they weren't going to go ahead and offer the 3 first round picks for Deshaun and try to get the Texans to bite on that deal. And so instead they went with Sam Darnold. And as for Deshaun Watson, the NFL is taking a wait and see investigative approach. And right now, as the civil lawsuits pile up, we have yet to hear a whole lot from Randy Harden, who is the attorney for Deshaun Watson, but he continues to say that they've got evidence on their own side that will prove that there are many holes in the allegations that the women are making, the now 22 women who filed civil lawsuits, and then there are others who have spoken out but haven't taken any legal action. I thought this was interesting. It's a letter that Texans season ticket holders received on Monday, and a lot of teams do this. They write to their season ticket holders in the springtime to try to generate some excitement and also give an update on where the team stands. Thank them for being season ticket holders. But the McNair family sent this letter to all the season ticket holders for the Texans and addressed the civil lawsuits. And this is the quote that was in the letter. "We want to assure you that we take these allegations very seriously. While we await the conclusion of these investigations, we express our strong stance against any form of sexual assault. Our family and the entire Houston Texans organization are deeply troubled, by any form of abuse, and we condemn this type of behavior." Now, again, Rusty Harden, through different statements, has indicated that these allegations were these actions coerced by Deshaun, and that all of the actions that were taken by the massage therapists were consensual or were agreed to. And so it sounds like that's the legal approach that Rusty Harden and his camp may be taking. And so in addition to finding other massage therapists who will vouch for Deshaun, and I think the last number I heard was 18 massage therapists who will say, or who are writing statements to say, that Deshaun never did anything like what's alleged to them. You've got 22 civil lawsuits that allege different things, like sexual assault and Watson touching these women in ways that they didn't want. And so it's becoming a he said, she said, she said, she said, she said, she said, and it's really difficult to prove anything. But Tony Busby is expected to make more public comments coming up on Tuesday. And the NFL is going to have to decide whether or not there are criminal charges, whether or not there's any hard and fast proof or evidence. The NFL is going to have to decide whether Deshaun violated their personal conduct policy. Whew, that was a show. There was a lot of stuff I did not get to that I really wanted to. But take our quarterback poll, and then we're back tonight for our hump show. Thanks for joining us After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.